Welcome back to Toys on Tap. This week is a big week. We have someone who is a crazy artist who has all the talent in the world and is just pumping out insane work and has the skill set to back up every part of the process. Tony Mora comes on the podcast and just enlightens us on where he came from, where he's headed, and how he got there. If you want to support Toys on Tap in a free way, you can rate, review, subscribe wherever you get podcasts. You can follow us along on all socials at Toys on Tap. If you want to jump on to something a little more, jump on the Patreon, patreon.com/toysontap. That's where you get all the good stuff. All the good stuff. That's what we're here for. Now let's get to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. But I'm pumped, man. I'm pumped that you're on. I've gotten the chance to meet you at different conventions or shows and finally like got you on. And then we hung out at Scott's thing, which was cool. And so,
Yeah. Scott's a nice guy.
And then we kept just like, everyone I talked to would tell me something along the lines of like, this guy knows his stuff. Or like, he's been doing this a lot. And so, I'm pumped that we get to go on. But before we start anything, you got to introduce yourself, tell us who you are, what you do.
Oh, right. Yeah. I always love this part because, yeah, I hate it. my name's Tony Mora. I'm an artist. I've had a very long and varied career, basically starting in web animation to TV animation to video games and art show. I mean, just the gamut. And the past 5-6 years is when I got into what I've always wanted to do, is was 3D modeling, with the ultimate goal of making my own stuff.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm at right now. But it's been a very, even though it's like, this has been just a blip in my career, it's just one of the most, fun.
Yeah.
Just fun to, you know, I've always loved making stuff. Even since I was very little, just I've always made stuff.
Yeah.
And yeah, making things that are toy-like, it's just always been that thing of just creating. But it's always, even for work, early on in my life, but working with my dad at a machine shop, just making stuff. So it's always just been part of my vocabulary of just making things and figuring stuff out.
Yeah. So you have done everything.
I've done a lot. Yeah. Yeah. You know, a lot of my friends always tell me, you know, a lot of the stuff I've done, I've always taken a chance. I've always jumped. Whenever people offer me things, I don't even think sometimes. I'm like, yeah, I'll do it. Like, I may not know how to, but I'll figure it out. So
yeah.
I've always had an open mind to just jumping in. And, you know, there's always a little bit of fear that it might just collapse. And I've had a few things where it's like it didn't work, but I tried. And I think the biggest thing for anything, for anyone in the creative field, is why not try it? And if it doesn't work, well, Learn a lesson.
Yeah. I mean, what's that? Man, I always forget who says that quote where it's like, say yes, even if you don't know how to do it, you'll learn on the go.
Yeah. Fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
It's always the go-to.
I mean, especially it seems like in art and in art-related fields, there's this desire for people to know what they're needed for, or people hire based off of what you know. And if you don't have that experience, they won't hire you. But right. It becomes this cyclical cycle where one of us has to lie in order to get that job.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. You have to. And yeah, I mean, a lot of the stuff is predicated on your previous work.
Yeah.
It's always the whole thing. Like, what have you done for me lately?
Right.
You always want to, like, you show your resume, you show your work, and it's like, well, you did that 6 months ago. Like, what'd you make last week? You know, it's like, what? You know, and yeah. You know, coming from animation is could be so weird for people because, you know, people look at it as this, you know, like, wow, that's such a cool job. And it's a job, you know, and it's a great job. It's a very creative field, but it's not a steady job. You know, you're jumping around gig to gig constantly. If you're not used to that, you don't last. And so for me and, you know, a lot of other people in this industry, you just sort of string jobs together and it becomes a career.
Yeah.
So but a lot of friends that aren't in entertainment, when I tell them, like, oh, I'm going to be winding down on this show. And they're like, well, what do you do now? Like, aren't you worried? I'm like, no, I just go find another job.
Yeah.
I'll just go find another job. It's like, and you sort of get into this rhythm and just the, if you're reliable and you're good, word of mouth, people, friends, they just will say, hey, go talk to him. You know, he's available or he could help you out. And you're always juggling a lot. In animation, yeah. You're juggling a lot of things.
What up, toy nerds? This is Ray.
And Dave. Go check out our brand new YouTube channel, The Toy Rats.
We make toys.
We talk about toys.
We talk about old toys.
And new toys.
And toys that we make.
And we're just a bunch of goofballs. It's a good time.
We make fun of Dave a lot.
I'm all right with that. So, yeah, if you get a chance, go check out Toy Rats on YouTube. You won't be disappointed. You might be.
Yeah, you could. Who knows?
You got to check it out.
Toy Rats. Toy Rats. YouTube.
Bye.
Bye.
You're working on your job, looking for the next job, and possibly freelancing.
Yeah. You know, it is crazy. You know, I'm trying to get out of that cycle. This podcast is all about you, but here we are. I'm trying to get out of that cycle because, like, now that we're doing production with Toys on Tap, as we're like wrapping up one toy, my fear becomes like, what's next or what's the next piece of work? And that's what I feel. And this isn't my full-time job. So I can't imagine what people feel when this is their full-time job, because I feel like my brain is scrambling.
Yeah. I remember, must've been about, man, it's been a while now, maybe like 17 years ago, had like my first, like, mental, not collapse, but like anxiety.
Yeah.
And I remember going to the doctor and they're like, yeah, you know, it sounded like you had a panic attack and, you know, anxiety. I'm like, oh. And then he's like, you know, what do you do for a living? I'm like, oh, I'm an artist, you know, I'm working animation. And he's like, wait, how old are you? I'm like, 35. He's like, and you're just getting this? Because his experience is people that get into the entertainment field, you will get this.
Yeah.
Because it will set in. And it is, yeah, it is a tough thing to manage where you're, even though sometimes you get a steady job, you know, studio job, they don't last forever. And you do sometimes, if you're not careful, you just get this overwhelming sense of dread because you're like, oh man, I got to go look for a job in 6 months. It's like,
Yeah.
But again, you string enough along that the word gets out. And again, it doesn't take much. Just show up, do a good job. Don't be a jerk.
That is so true. I was talking to my wife yesterday and I brought up the thing, like, it takes zero effort to be nice. Zero. I was talking to someone about producing.
You'd be surprised.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? I was talking to someone about producing work and they came back with like, hey, I'm just slammed right now. Like, I don't have the ability to do that right now. Is it possible if we like hold off? And I just sent a message, said, dude, you don't have to apologize. Like, absolutely. Your schedule, like, I have to work around it because you're the one I'm going to. And they were super grateful, but it was like, man, if you're grateful for that, who is talking to you terribly? Like, that's awful.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you'd be surprised. There's like you said, you think it'd be easy to be nice, but for some people, it doesn't come easy. It takes effort to be nice. And it goes a long way. It goes a long way to keep like that mentality of just be, people just don't, I swear, it's like, man, if the stories I tell you
Yeah.
It's just some people don't get it. It's, if you're just nice, you're like, oh yeah, I would recommend you for that. Or I would introduce you to this person that could help you with this. But it's like, if you have this attitude, like, I don't want you in my aura.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't want you in my orbit. And the people I want in my orbit, you know, I look up to. Like, I have like strong feelings towards the people that I keep in my life. And I'm getting old, and I just feel time is ticking, and I don't want to waste my time. And so the people that are around me, they mean something to me, and I want them there, and I want their opinions. I want to talk to them.
Yeah.
And I'm no beating around the bush, you know, like I want honesty and all that. So, but some people don't get it. You know, some people could be real, real jerks, and you're like, why? And that, you know, sometimes when people say like, don't meet your heroes. And I've had that maybe like once or twice.
Yeah.
Oh man. Like why are you like that?
Yeah. That is crazy. Okay. So we're jumping into all the ways in which you've done art your whole life, but we've got to find the genesis of this. So take me back to your childhood. What are the toys you're playing with, the cartoons that you're watching that are kind of igniting this love?
Oh man. Well, I'll be a broken record because everyone hears my stories.
Yeah.
But my very first moment that I can recall being alive was watching Speed Racer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, on a small, like 9-inch black and white TV that sat on like our dresser drawer. We lived in Bell Gardens here in SoCal. And it was just a one room little house, like just dinky. And that's my very first memory, is watching Speed Racer and just being transported. Like, I just remember being alive. I mean, that was like I'm alive. Like, yeah. That's my memory that I remember, just being completely absorbed by that. And at the time, you know, I must have been like 3 that I can remember. And yeah, you know, you had all this anime, which I didn't know was anime at the time. I didn't learn about anime till way later in life. But I remember that, and Kimba the White Lion and Astro Boy and just, you know, Giant Robo. I mean, all that stuff, Godzilla, all these things. Living there in Bell Gardens, my parents were immigrants. We were like the first, my parents were the first to come over, our entire family.
Mm-hmm.
And we all sort of congregated there. Our entire block, there were about 4 or 5 of our family members, like extended family, that moved there because you just kind of glom together.
Yeah.
But I remember there was an apartment complex right next to where we lived, you know, and there's, you know, Americans, and they did not like us.
Yeah.
And I remember one Christmas, they would throw away their toys, their old toys. And we go around trash digging all the time in their dumpster. And I pulled out a Godzilla, a Shogun Godzilla. And I was overjoyed. I could not believe it. I was like, wow, like I seen this on like a TV commercial. And I pulled it out. I remember the kids just like laughing at me, you know, like calling me a trash digger and this and that. Like, and I was just like beaming, like I got this incredible toy.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, I just always had, it was such a huge influence, these anime or Japanese, shows when we were kids, cause it was different. And at the time, that's what we knew.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I grew up on that, never lost my love of any of that. Just, it was always on my mind. And, we eventually moved out to Norwalk, went to school, always drew. I just always drew. Even my older sister and brother, my older sister, she ended up becoming like a designer for clothing. My brother, architecture. And then I ended up doing a lot of drawing. And my younger sister, she...
Art is just in your family. Holy geez.
Yeah, you know, I just had met up with a cousin of mine that I had not seen in decades. And that was the very first thing he brought up.
Yeah.
He was like, man, you Morris. Like you guys, like all of you, like you just for some reason, all of you had were artistic. But yeah, I remember my dad, he was artistic, I would say, as well. And even my mom, I mean, she would make our clothes. Like, she would literally make the clothes that we wore. And my dad, again, he was like a machinist, metal, a lathe person. Mm-hmm. But even I remember him just making out of just clay. He would make these little birds, and I would just marvel, like, wow, just by pinching and manipulating, like, you have this little bird or a little pig. And I was just fascinated. And, you know, I'm sure that had some sort of influence of my love of, like, miniatures. Mm-hmm. I just loved miniature little figures. I remember when we would get the Sears catalog, I would immediately grab it and go to the toy section.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing the metal, the small die-cast Star Wars, the playsets, and they had the little metal figurines. And I remember going, I would ride my bike to Sears just because they actually have a diorama, mm-hmm. like a table on display of all the sets that you can get. And I would just go there and look, and I would just play with them without even touching, because they're like under like a acrylic. And I would just go there and look and just try to imagine what was happening in this world, because I never saw Star Wars.
Yeah.
I did not see my very first Star Wars movie. I know I'm going to be jumping around like crazy, but my first Star Wars movie was Return of the Jedi. Never saw Star Wars, never saw Empire, because our family, we never went to the movies. Mm-hmm. We just did not. It was an expense that was like, it was too much. We just did not do that. So in my mind, I would make up my own Star Wars stories, and I would see trading cards that my friends would get at the liquor store. And I'd be like, wow, like, you know, I can only imagine. And my very first experience with Star Wars was one Sunday night. I remember on our old radio tuning in, I was just goofing around, and I started hearing like these sound effects. And I was like, what is that? And all of a sudden I'm hearing like bleeps and bloops and R2-D2. I'm like, wait, what is it? And it was the radio play it was serialized on the radio.
Yeah.
And so that was my first experience with Star Wars. So I heard Star Wars before I saw it. And so in my mind, I was creating these worlds of like, whoa, like, what do they look like? And what are they doing? And it blew my mind away. I was like, this is crazy that I get to experience this way. But I never saw Star Wars until I was in my late teens, I think.
I mean, and out of context, those aliens and stuff look crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And so without a story, like those things, seeing those cards or whatever is probably crazy.
Oh, yeah. When I finally got to see it, I was like, this looks nothing like the movie in my head. I'm like, oh man, they dropped the ball with this character or something. Like they could have done, you know, like,
yeah.
But I just remember so vividly hearing, and I even my mind's eye, I can remember even turning the dial and the crackle of the static. And when I heard that blaster, I immediately knew, like, what is that? And sure enough, it was Star Wars on the radio. And I was blown away that, well, I'm tuning in every Sunday. And that led to me, like, you know, also discovering like Dr. Demento on Sunday nights. And, you know, I was just a very, very radio centric younger, not watching things. I'd watch stuff, but also the radio had a big influence on me, got my mind going, because I would make stuff up and pretend what they looked like. I didn't know what Dr. Demento looked like. I thought he was like an actual clown, you know?
As you explain the dynamic of going to school for something like animation or graphic design, because you talk about your family coming here and being like moving to the United States. Mm-hmm. And then you are talking about going to school for something that doesn't fit into the trope of you need to be a lawyer or a doctor or something that makes money for the whole family.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so what happened?
No. Yeah. My parents were very hands off. All they ever cared about is that We were good people.
Yeah.
And you worked. Work was just pile driven into my head at a very young age. Another story I tell everyone, I remember, you know, we would always go to the park. We have family gatherings on the weekends at a park in Bell Gardens. And at the end of the day, it's all right. Bust out the bags, start collecting all the aluminum cans and bottles because we're going to try to, like, you know, make some money. So, like, work, play was always intertwined. And I remember when we moved from Bell Gardens, we got a house in Norwalk and we had a giant avocado tree.
Mm-hmm.
It was the most magical avocado tree because it gave year round and it still gives year round. Like, it just keeps making avocados. It's incredible. And I remember one day my mom had me pick a big old bucket of them, like a 5-gallon bucket. And, you know, I picked it and she's like, okay, follow me. And I, you know, had this dragging this bucket. She's like, okay, you're going to go door to door and you're going to be selling these avocados, you know, 4 for $1. And I mean, I was like 4 or 5.
Yeah.
I'm dragging this bucket, no wheels, dragging it. And yeah, to knock on doors and start hustling. And she stayed with me for first couple of houses and she's like, okay, you got this, and just walked away. And that's what I did. I would go door to door selling avocados 4 for $1. And people happily gave me money because it was a bargain even back then, I think. And yeah, I would just, you know, every day I go farther and farther, you know, like going to more people's homes. And I remember even my wife asked me not too long ago, she said, what do you think you got this hustle in you? I'm like, my parents, of course. It's just,
yeah.
It was like, you had to work. And I think even my dad probably thought we got off easy because I think he probably started at a younger age.
Yeah. That's crazy.
You guys are getting off easy because, I mean, he grew up on a ranch.
Yeah.
Where the moment you can hold something in your hand, you were working. So to hear it from him, my parents, it's like, oh, you guys got off easy. Oh, you guys didn't start working till you're 4 or 5. It's like, lame.
Yeah. with them being so hands off, was there also a disconnect in your relationship with them? Because, like, it's hard to convey how much work goes into animation or in design. Like, there's no way that you'll be able to say, like, hey, I worked on this for like 60 hours. Like, it was a long time. Cause that doesn't translate to
yes, there is a disconnect. And I think that's a huge thing that happens now in today's world where it's all digital, right?
Yeah.
I could have worked on 10 backgrounds this week. And you show people the image, the finished image, you're like, oh, okay. But they don't see the process.
Yeah.
If you video yourself doing the process, you people will get bored. Like, you do that for 10, 12, 15 hours a day? It's like, yeah, that's what it takes sometimes.
Yeah.
To, like, make finished pieces of art on a conveyor belt system. Like, you got to crank stuff out. I remember I went to Art Center in the late, mid-90s. And I was one of the first on my group. I was always, even when I was going to school, I was interning or getting little jobs, learning, you know, talking to small studios around Pasadena. And I ended up getting an internship at Spumco, the company that did Ren Stimpy.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I started there and they gave me a task to paint a background and have it in the next day.
Yeah.
And I went back to class. And I'm telling my friends, like, oh my God, like, they gave me this assignment and look, I got to finish it by tomorrow. And they were stunned. They're like, what? That's like a semester project for us.
No, not today.
I think this is what's in the real world, dude. And my friends were just like completely just shocked.
Yeah.
And so it's a different, you know, but again, you do it so many times, it's putting in the reps, putting in the hours, the drawings, the painting, that now sometimes when I make a piece of art, it'll go from just sketched to finished within a couple hours.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, that's just the way I work. And other, you know, I'm not special. Other guys are the same. You know, I know guys are could finish, do pieces that look incredible, like masterpieces within a couple of hours, where it's like, yeah, maybe that would have taken me a day or two, but they could do it in a couple of hours. It's just, yeah. Again, learning that flow is important for some people, but it's also the process. But the question you're asking, though, yeah, it is, there is a disconnect. And I could tell you that, yeah, for years, my mom, I'd go visit my mom and she would have friends over. And, you know, I would, before I went to art school, I was still working in the machine shop and I would make my dad's like stickers or packaging.
Yeah.
Address labels. And my mom, which like, she's, you know, I was going to art school, I think. And my mom would like start showing her friends like, oh, look, this is what my son does. And she's like showing them like address labels. I'm like, Mom. I think I was working on Mucha Lucha at the time,
okay,
in the early 2000s. And I'm like, Mom, do you know I work on TV shows that are watched by millions of people? Like, she, but no, address labels. That's what my son does. I'm like, oh my Lord. But there is a disconnect again, because you're working on a computer. There's really no paper trail. You can't be like, oh, look all the stuff I made this week.
Yeah.
You have to sit down and actually start hitting the arrow and being like, well, look at all the work I did this week.
Yeah, that is crazy. I think with graphic design too, it's like, look at all these different layers of this design. Like each layer does something different.
Oh yeah.
Going to school for this, what's that? Tell me about that first job that you're getting and kind of the shock that is involved in now doing it professionally.
You know, I can't remember where I heard this, but the moment someone pays you
mm-hmm.
for something, you're a professional.
Yeah.
And now, again, it's that idea of stringing these jobs along so that it's a career. And so for me, I just feel like it's been my career my entire life, because even as a kid, I mean, kids would pay me. You know, draw me this character, draw me this character. I mean, you know, people would give me money. So again, I wasn't a professional.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get reach a certain skill level that, yes, you can perform at a high level. And I think animation, especially TV animation, is a great breeding ground for really getting your chops, because you have to work so fast at a very high level. But that's everyone though. You're not special. I do consider people, all my coworkers, to be special, because I feel like I'm always in awe of their skills. Because even though I feel I can do a little bit of everything on a production, just sometimes you're just taken aback, you know, and you really, you know, sometimes, you know, I worked on the Animaniacs reboot and it was such a massive show. It's like over 100 people on the crew. And I'm just like, man, all the talent to make this thing is incredible.
Mm.
But that's the same with everything that is mass produced. You know, the same with toys. You know, you can design it, but if you get it mass produced, like, it's not some other person. It's people.
Yeah.
it's people that they're all very good at that one thing. And it helps make that thing possible. So there's a lot of trust that I feel when you're on these productions or making things, to rely on other people that they are good at what they do.
Yeah.
And for them to come through on finishing, they're part of the bargain. You know?
Yeah.
You know, I'm gonna hold you to it, please. You know, I think when I started making my own figures, I remember talking to Chris from Last Bastion, Ragnar Squad.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember asking him, because I think his paints are amazing. And I remember I would come into this thing of where I'd ask people like, oh, could you help me with this? Or how do you do that? And some people wouldn't respond. I remember him telling me like, Tony, you have to understand that there's a lot of like people that want to make stuff, but they just talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you end up spending your time telling them how to do it, and then you never see them again. They sort of just, they get excited, but they don't execute. And one of the biggest things in anything, I don't care what you do in life, is execution.
Yeah.
Like, you know, are you going to manifest what you talked about? You could talk a big game, but are you really going to make it? A lot of people that I try to surround myself are those people. They are the manifest.
Yeah.
They talk about it, they show it, they share it, and they make it. And it's a really big thing, you know? And again, I'm not saying you're special because you could do that, but it really takes a certain kind of person to be at their computer, at their drawing desk, in the garage, in their studio, to actually follow through on a project. And it could be a very, very, and it is a very lonely life of, you know, that you want to make these things that, you know, some people may not even care about. A lot of the stuff I make because I want to, again, I want to manifest. I want to make it appear.
Yeah.
And if people like it, cool. That's awesome. The feedback, that's great. But once I'm done with the thing, it's like, on to the next.
Yeah. You know, I think being in the art world and watching all these artists do what they're doing, right? And us helping like bring art to life and doing that stuff. There is a quote that I saw early on that kind of sticks to it, where it's like, it doesn't matter how bad the first time is, do it. It's going to suck, but you need to start. And if you'll figure it out along the way. And like, if you go back and listen to the first couple episodes of Toys on Tap, don't, because it's rough. Like, it is just such a crazy,
but you shouldn't hide it though.
Right.
I mean,
right.
I'll look back at some of my early stuff, but I'm not going to take it down.
Right.
If anything, I'll tell people, go look at it.
We interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this. Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet.
Oh my, we're doomed.
Wait, salvation. Hooray, we're saved, DOV2. Limited edition custom artist made action figures and DKE toys.
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures.
DKE.
Go see where I started.
Yeah.
You know, go see where I started. When I started doing a lot of my sculptures, I was a little bit fearful of wanting to do more organic type modeling, because I was really into low poly, really graphic. I love clean angles. Again, I think it has something to do with my working in a machine shop. I love flat metal, chrome. There's a beauty to it. And when I started my first time, I'd work with David Kaufman.
Mm-hmm.
At Insomniac Games. And David, if you know, like, huge Sofubi collector.
Yeah, I spent that day. I saw you in LA. He was there, and then he, like, I showed up at SummerSlam and he was also there.
Right. Yeah, no, huge on the scene.
Yeah.
And around 2010, we're working at Insomniac. He came on board, and, you know, I saw that he collected. And one day, he's basically one of the reasons why I'm here today. Mm-hmm. For like making stuff, is he asked me one day at lunch, he's like, well, what did you like as a kid? What kind of stuff? I'm like, oh man, you know, I didn't have a lot of toys, but there was this one toy line I really loved. It was called Muscle. And I'm like, I don't know if you know about it. I'm older than David. I'm older than a lot of people.
Yeah.
On the scene. And he's like, oh, so you must know about the underground muscle scene. I said, oh, who's a was a what now? And he's like, there's people that make bootleg muscle figures. I said, get the hell. And so immediately jumped online, and sure enough, one of the first people I found was this guy called Namaniku,
mm-hmm.
a very good friend of mine now, Tyler. And he was, I mean, he is like the Kinuku Man muscle collector here in the States. He's huge.
Yeah.
And he was running a contest, a photo contest of, if you make a cool little scene with your muscle guys, send it in and I'll send you one of my custom bootleg figures. And then I looked at the blog. It was a blog, of course, 2010.
Yeah.
And I saw the date. And I think I jumped on it one day too late, that the contest was over. I was like, oh, goddamn. I'm like, but I said, screw it. I'm still gonna make something. So I made some cool little diorama, sent it off, and he was stoked. And he sent me my very first little muscle bootleg. And I was like, that was it. I was hooked.
Yeah.
And I came in at a time of the muscle scene here in America. It was like the golden age from what I could tell, because there was these guys that were making incredible bootlegs. There was Brown Noise, Muscle Things, trying to think of some other guys. But those were the main, Eric Nilla. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Eric, if I say your name wrong. I'm Nia Nilla. But they were incredible. It, to me, I was just like, wow. And especially Muscle Things. Muscle Things was hands down like one of the greatest at making bootleg muscle figures. Brown Noise up there as well. Like he did some just incredible stuff. And I would collect as much as possible. I had a really, really good collection. I still do. It's the small amount that I have in my collection is a lot of just bootlegs.
Yeah.
I don't really collect mainline stuff. It's always like bootleg stuff. So yeah, David like launched me into this world where I was like, wow, like, this is so cool. So even at that time, I started sketching ideas. I was like, wow, maybe I could do this.
Yeah.
And so I remember I was that guy that I just told you earlier about, where I reached out to a pretty well-known guy on the scene and I sent him some drawings. I'm like, do you think you can make this for me? And then he just told me, you go figure it out. And I was like, oh, dejected. But it's because now I know that, yeah, I think at that time I wasn't ready, because I wasn't sculpting anything. I know I could sculpt. I've sculpted before. I can make stuff. But I'm like, well, how do you like make these out of rubber, this and that? And it wasn't the right time. And I didn't have the space. I saw all these guys with all their machinery and all that. I'm like, I don't want to start doing that. I left that life behind when I left my dad's shop. I was like, I don't have space for that in my house.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until another not that, maybe around 2012, 13, I was walking to lunch and I saw a sign at, I forget the hotel or here at Burbank, but it said like 3D printing expo. I was like, what is this about? And it was open. I just walked right in and I just saw all this stuff in there, like, you know, like just utility type stuff, like things to use with your hands, not toys or anything. But I was amazed that you could make these things, these printers. They were very archaic at the time. But I remember looking at this one machine, and sure enough, some representative of the company walked over to me. He's like, oh, you know, like, you're like, who are you? Like, what are you interested in? I'm like, oh, no, I'm a nobody. I literally walked off the street. And, you know, we started talking, and he's like, well, you're an artist, you know, maybe you can make stuff with this. I'm like, yeah, but I can't afford this. The machine costs like $100,000.
Yeah.
And so I was like, you know, it's a bit out of my price range. And he's like, no. 5 years. In 5 years, you'll be able to have this on your desktop. And so I always remembered that. I kept it in the dark part of my brain. And I was like, you know, I'll remember that. And I was always researching 3D printing. And sure enough, around 2018, 19, I started hearing about Prusa and bought their machines. And they're like over $1,000, but I always see really good reviews. And that's some other companies. But what I really wanted to do was, well, I need to learn how to make stuff, which was to learn how to 3D model, which I'm jumping around, but I literally went to art school to learn how to become a 3D artist. I was completely enamored with the very first Mortal Kombat movie, the lizard character that was CG.
Yeah.
I was blown away. I was like, what am I looking at? And I'm sure that came out probably
like 96, 94.
An empire of blister. Empire blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 2.75 inch or 1/18 scale. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire blisters.
Now functional. Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's TOYSOMTAP 10.
Empire blisters. Empire blisters.
Around there, I'm sure it came out after Jurassic Park, because even Jurassic Park, yeah, I think, was a total mind-blowing experience for me, where I'm like, how do they make that? And I was not entertainment yet. I didn't know anything about this stuff.
Yeah.
But I was always intrigued about computers, technology. Again, didn't see Return of the Jedi, first Star Wars movie, but my very first movie ever in the theater was Tron. And so Tron, for me, is my Star Wars. That was, I would remember back in the day, they would have like on TV showing the making of, and they were talking about, you know, CG computers, CG graphics. I'm like, what? You're working on a TV screen? Like, I didn't even know the concept of computers. This is just crazy.
Yeah.
And so for me, Tron was just this high watermark of like, that's what computer graphics is. Clean surfaces, angular, and that's what kind of resurfaced when I came onto the scene. I did very geometric, blocky type designs, but stuff that I felt that were pleasing, that weren't like very harsh. So that was like my my first attempts were just very low poly stuff, which is still challenging to make, you know. Even I made a Space Godzilla, all very low poly. And I remember Chris Lee, who you know.
Yeah.
He found my work just totally, even though we're like neighbors. I've been a huge fan of Chris for years. I was tabling with David Kaufman at DesignerCon. And he came to the table to buy some stuff off David. And then he kind of like looked at me. He's like, what, Tony, what are you doing here? Because again, he knew me. I'm just like a fan, you know? And I'm like, I'm selling my figures. And I was, you know, I made a line that first year I started making. I made a pretty good number of figures that I made. And he's like, what? He's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, I made all these. He's like, he had no idea, but he gravitated to my Space Godzilla. And he was just like, what? This is like really cool. And I was just like, turn on the waterworks. Because I think Chris is just like one of the most talented artist designers out there. And just like to hear that, I was just completely just struck. And he's like, man, you know, we gotta find a way how to work together on something. And I'm like, oh, dude, that dream again, manifest.
Yeah.
Manifest. Like, again, I think certain things in life, if you don't try or you put yourself in position, uncomfortable positions. I never tabled a show like DesignerCon. It was completely scary to me. But you know, luckily I was with friends there and it softened the blow. And you know, even like I got to talk to God, I forget his name, but Mutant Vinyl Hardcore.
Oh yeah.
He's friends with David, and he came to the table. He was selling out of his stuff, and I got to talk shop with him. And it was just so many really cool experiences, meeting people. But a lot of the things that stemmed from like my childhood, I tell people now, it's like, as you get older, you start reverting to the stuff that you loved as a child. And that for me is completely true, because I'm just like, yeah, man, I loved all that kaiju and anime and just little figures. And like, that's what I want to do. Won't pay the bills.
Yeah.
but I can have some fun doing it. And it's a great creative outlet. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. I mean, the whole scene is a lot of fun.
When you are doing this, at what point, because you're doing animation and you jump through different parts of the art world, at what point do you realize that you want to do 3D modeling so bad that you like, that's just becoming the chase then?
Yeah, so I never lost my dream. So like I said, I was really excited about Lizard from Mortal Kombat. Went to the art center to learn it. I took a 3D modeling class and I learned that I hated it.
Yeah.
because at the time the program Maya was like math. It was super technical. And so I got really depressed and I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do with my life? But then again, other doors open. And again, at the time I was really, and I've always been into technology and I was always on the internet. And that's when I found out about Spumco. They were looking for an intern, jumped at the chance. They accepted me.
Yeah.
Even as raw as I was, they accepted me, but they saw that I had the drive. They were like, this guy, he can do stuff, you know, like he can do stuff that we can't. And that's what they took me in, like, oh, he's our computer guy. And so I helped them with a lot of their like digital painting, coloring, animating, learning Flash. So yeah. So I never lost the idea that I want a model, but again, the programs just seemed they just were hard. About 2015, I started hearing about this program called Blender.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a free 3D program. But again, the interface just looked whack. I was like, that looks terrible. But I always kept touch with it. I was always like, read about it. And around 2019, I believe. Yes. They announced that they were going to completely redo their UI.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, this is the game changer. This is it, folks. We're going to make it super clean, easy to read. Like you know, anyone could use this. The very same month that they announced this change, our animation union announced a Blender course. Immediately pressed the yes, interested. I'm taking it.
Yeah.
My good friend, Brock Gallagher, another guy, incredible animator, 3D guy. He was like, yeah, I'll join you. And so took the class and I felt reborn. That first afternoon, just from the teacher showing us what we could do, I understood. And that was it. And I'm a Flash guy. I'm a Flash animator. I think Flash is like one of the greatest programs ever made. It's super simple. You create incredible stuff with it. It was the same feeling I had back in the mid-90s when they showed me this program. I understood it explicitly. Like, oh, I get this. In one afternoon. And Blender was that same feeling. I was like, wow, like, this is so easy. Like, it's so big. If you just know the basic building blocks of shapes and patterns and how to put things together, you can make stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that very moment, I gave myself a 3-year plan. And that 3-year plan was my first year, every day touch Blender. I don't care if it's for a minute or it's for 5 hours, but I'm going to dedicate myself and throw myself into this world. And just repetition, opening the program, learning the shortcuts. I didn't even create much that first year. I just was just to wrap my brain around it. And so I just kept at it. So I felt comfortable. And so I said, okay, well, that's first step. Second step, buy a 3D printer. So I bought a Prusa. My friend told me, get a Prusa. I'm like, okay, I'm getting a Prusa. So I started teaching myself how to 3D print on a Prusa. In conjunction, keep modeling, learn how to 3D print. So sure enough, end of that second year, I was like, okay, I'm feeling pretty good. Third year, start making stuff, like stuff that I'm actually going to make and sell. And that's what I did. So I started, you know, actually started putting out my Space Godzilla, my, like, I was making Mothras, like all these, like, you know, cool little designs that I made on my printer. And again, not setting the world on fire. I didn't care.
Yeah.
I was just putting it out there, man. And if it didn't sell, I was like, well, I have plenty of gifts to give to my friends.
Man. Yeah.
But that third year, I was like, okay, I'm going to get a resin printer. I'm going to learn how to resin print now, because that's the only way I can get the fidelity of these figures, because I could not get that fidelity on an FDM printer. So bought myself a little, very small little resin printer, and that was it. I was like, dream realized. I was in shock that I could get the exact same thing that I modeled on the computer into reality.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a kick that I get to this day. Every time I go to my printer and it successfully prints, you know, which is pretty, I have a pretty good track record now. Yeah. And it works, and I take it off and I'm just in awe that this, I live in the future. I live again, my background is making things. Like, you know, I made tons and tons of parts for cars, for racing cars, and like all this stuff, hot rods. You know, I made things, you know, I would mold things. And this was different though. This was like, wow, like this is an actual expression of my mind. Like, I'm literally manifesting something that I sketched, that something that I now modeled, and now I actually printed. I'm now holding in my hand, and now I can show someone, like, look, like, I made this. And it's an incredible feeling. And I'm like, I tell people, I'm like diarrhea of the mouth. When people start asking me about 3D printing or Blender, I'm just like, don't get me started.
Yeah.
Because I feel... everyone should learn this, because it unlocks a different part of your brain where, at least for me, I know I had to force myself to learn, because there's some, you know, again, there's hurdles for anything you have to learn, but it's a lot of stuff. When you do get into resin printing, it's a lot of steps, a lot of safety precautions. And yeah, you start building your tool sets.
Yeah.
And it's you become like a factory.
Yeah.
But again, I don't begrudge it. I think it's awesome. And you know, if you talk to Chris, I don't know if Chris talked about it, but again, he lives not too far from me. And I basically mentored him for like the past year and a half. He would come over and I'd help him out for prototyping his pieces or like stuff. He had other guys do it. I was just helping him print, because he could just see it in hand. Like, he would send me a file in the morning and he'd come over in the afternoon, like, in hand, done.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's an amazing feeling to see that thing again manifested. You're like, wow, here it is. And then, because it's different on the computer screen, the play of light on the sculpture of the piece in real life, and that's when you really start seeing, like, oh, I can change this, I can change that. And you know, even when I do my sculptures now, I'll make test prints so I can really see it in the light. You know, like, did I cut too deep here? Because it makes too much shadow there. It's too much, you know? So then I'll go back into my sculpture and then I'll re-sculpt it a little bit and change things. And yeah, it's always a ballet of just back and forth sometimes. But you start learning the more you do it, like, what you can get away with. And sometimes it's just straight to the printer, print it, and yeah, that looks good. And then, okay, well, I'll do a small run of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, put them out there. So, but yeah, it's an amazing feeling. I swear to God, I tell people, like, when you do it, when you make something all the way through, and for me, it feels so awesome when I've completed a piece all the way through to paint it and everything, and, you know, put it on display, and like, and someone buys it. I'm just like, oh my God, like, they get it. You know?
Yeah.
They get it. So
yeah, that is
it's an amazing feeling.
It's something to be able to hold the anytime I get a prototype, it's insane. And then walk me up to you now have your job that you've wanted. You now have kind of like progressed to this point. When did that happen?
So again, being open to opportunities.
Yeah.
Always one of the things where some people falter, where they think they can't, or sometimes there's a lot of fear. And I know it too, where you're like, for me, I'd never left a job in my life until I was approached to work at Insomniac Games. Mm-hmm. I've always seen my jobs through. Like, I would never leave a job midway. But I remember I was working on the Mad animated TV series. And when the director, showrunner guy hired me, they found it very hard to keep people because it's a very hard show to make. And he like made me promise to him, like, don't leave us. You can't leave.
Yeah.
I'm like, sure. But then I got offered to go to Insomniac and I left. But now the past several years in animation has been dire. Like, it's been like the worst than the worst ever. Then I think from like the early 80s, they had some really big downturn. But I mean, it was just like slim pickings. And so, luckily, or just again, manifest, the thing I was doing for fun, making my little figures, I caught the eye of my friend Namaniku on Instagram, Tyler, and he approached me, this was 2 years ago now, to make a toy. And I thought, oh, he wants me to make a little muscle figure. And I was like, sure, you know, I was out of work. I got time. I could do this. But it was to actually make a real mass-produced toy for a new startup called Ghostwrite, which now they're like doing, again, I started in February of 2023 and it was being produced by the end of July.
Mm-hmm. That's so quick.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
It was absolutely insane. But again, I'd never made a toy like that. I remember Josh Luber, who owns the company, when he had approached, he had hired Tyler to find me. I had no idea what they wanted, but when I remember our first meeting, he said that he basically wanted to make a competitor to Bear Brick. And I was like, what? Like, I don't know how to do that. And he's like, well, you don't have to. We're going to try to figure it out. And I remember going off for 3 days and just drawing, just piles of drawings, and then turning them in. And not even 5 minutes later, I get a text from Josh and he's like, we have to talk right now. We have to get on Zoom right now. I was like, oh man, I messed up. He must hate my work. Like, why would he contact me so quickly?
Yeah.
And we get in the call and he starts saying, is this normal? And I was like, what? Like, what do you, he's like, is this normal for you? And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't, he's like, is this normal for you? I'm like, dude, you're freaking me out. I don't know what you're talking about. He's like, Tony, I've hired design firms, design teams, artists, toy makers, toy designers, and none of them turned in the amount of work that you did in these 3 days. Not just the amount, the quantity, but the quality. He's like, I want to turn all these designs into toys. I was like, what? And I remember him turning to Tyler on the Zoom meeting. He's like, yeah, I think you found me the right guy. Because he was just going through that. But that was like another stepping stone for me, because then that led to more people sharing my work, people knowing about me in the scene, and which led me to this other opportunity where it was another startup and they were looking for a sculptor, and they had approached two of my friends that basically passed on the job, or they felt that they didn't have the tool sets, I guess, that was described to them, which described me, which was just like this jack of all trades, that I can go from concept to completed thing of anything. And so they both mentioned me without talking to each other. They just said, no, you should go talk to Tony. You should go talk to him. And so again, you know, they hit me up, and, you know, during the meeting, that they didn't even realize the scope of the type of work I did. They just thought I was a sculptor because that's what they needed. But what they really needed was an Imagineer. And so I remember when they were describing the work I was doing, I immediately said, wait, I was like, hold up. You're describing an Imagineering job. And then he said, correct. He said, that's what we're looking for. He's like, you get it. He's like, you understand. I'm like, yeah, I do. And I was super excited because I never thought I would have an opportunity to do something like that, where it's like, yeah, Imagineering is, I think probably in the getting a paycheck from a studio job is probably like on everyone's hit list.
Yeah.
Because it's like you have resources. Like Imagineering, you have resources. Like if you want to make something, you will get it done. Like, you know, there's a cost involved, but it's not coming out of your pocket.
Right.
So you can go buck wild and be like, woo, let's try to make this. Will it work? We don't know. Let's try. And so that's what this job is. So the company I work for is called Illusion of Life, which is based on the book by the two animators from Disney from back in the day. I literally get to make whatever I want for whatever the job calls for. I get help create.
Yeah.
So it could be something small, it'd be something big, or just recently, just last night, we launched, I made a sculpture, a little minifigure on a meme image on X, and we put it up for sale on eBay, and now we're just going to see like where it goes. But it was just something I did for fun. Like, no one asked me to do it. I just like, hey guys, look what I did. And they're like, that's awesome. Let's try to do something with that. So we have a larger scope that we want to do for our work is opening up a theme park in New York City called Dog World NYC. And if you're familiar with like Meow Wolf in Las Vegas, that's sort of the type of theme park we're looking at making. It's more of like an experience. So, but there's just a lot, again, it almost makes sense that we're doing this because there's several guys on our team that have a background in working in theme parks and stop motion. And it's incredible team. Again, I feel like a child compared to some of these guys on my team, where I'm like, I can't believe I'm working with them. And yeah, dream job, I felt a lot of my jobs I've had in my career have been dream jobs. They still are. For me, the act of creation is the greatest feeling.
Yeah.
So if someone's actually paying me to create, I mean, that says something, that they trust me, they believe in me, and, you know, the sustaining me and my family.
Yeah.
So it's a huge ask. Again, when you're making stuff, you're a professional. When you are a professional, is that you follow through, you finish what you were tasked to do. And yeah, some people take it as a huge stress, you know, like, oh, I gotta do that thing. But for me, it's like, oh, I get to figure that out.
Yeah. That's incredible. It's probably so gratifying to get to a point where you have a job that not only you fit in, but fits you. And
right. Yeah.
Now to look towards that and love going to work.
Yeah. You know, I feel like I've always had this affinity. I wouldn't say I'm a workaholic. It's just that the work doesn't seem like work to me. You know, it's, I get to play, you know, it's like for some people it's math, and art can be math sometimes, but you reach a certain level where even mathematicians are artists, right? Mm-hmm. They know everything. All that's left now is to play with ideas. How, what, where, like, how do you make sense of this thing? And that's creation, you know? Math is creation, and vice versa.
Yeah.
It goes both ways. It's the extremes. People think, there's people in my life that I know, they love math. And I'm like, are you
psycho.
Crazy? Yeah. You're insane. But yet there's people like me on the other side where I could just sit there and I could draw all day. Like all I need is a piece of paper and a lead pencil. And I am not bored.
Yeah.
I tell my kids that, like, take a notepad and a pencil or pen with you if you're going somewhere. If you think you're going to get bored.
Yeah.
I carry something with me at all times, because in I scribble. I don't even really draw. I scribble, and people can look at my drawings and like, what is this trash? Like, it's just for me to express maybe some idea, or just to write down words for me to remember, to trigger that memory. Like, why? And now everyone has phones, and yeah, I can take a picture of something. I have to draw it. But for me, I think the feeling of me actually putting something with my hand, it triggers something in my brain that it's like, oh, it becomes real. You know, a lot of the stuff when I'm actually drawing becomes real in my mind. And it's very concrete at that moment. Once I put it down on paper, I'm like, oh, there it is. And then now it's now in my vault of ideas in my brain that I'm like, okay, I'll get to that one. And
yeah.
But so it's a curious feeling, I think, for some people that don't think like that. But I think if you do it long enough, it just becomes second nature. Because my brain is never off. It's always thinking, well, what's the next thing? Or even what's the current thing? Like, how do I make it better or add things? And yeah, I think that's why I love being able to 3D print my own stuff and not mass produce yet. That I can just go, oh, I'm gonna tweak it now. I just did, I'm getting ready for Kaijufornia mm-hmm. this month. And I'm doing a new Shin Alfzilla.
Yeah.
and I sculpted it, I printed it. And when I had it in my hand, I was like, you know, this doesn't hit the way I thought. Like on the computer, it looked cool. Took it out, printed it, cleaned it up, primered it, and I was looking at it, I was like, you know, it needs something else. So I immediately went back, just vague idea, sketched, like, you know, it could just be more. It could just needs character.
Yeah.
Which I think some of my pieces have. I don't like having stuff that are really dead eye,
mm-hmm.
but it's like I want character. And so I went back and like I redid the head. And now to me, it's like, yeah, this feels more like me. And so I just went with it. And so I'm working on that. I also did a Shin Garmura, and I'll be painting those. And then I'll have some, I just talked to David. David Kaufman just came by, dropped off some amazing pieces and that he painted for me. And but it was my list, the three Kaijueros that I had at the Indie Toy Show.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have these at Kaijufornia. And I'm super stoked. They are absolutely beautiful pieces. I almost don't want them to sell. And I told them that. I'm like, look, it's a win-win. If it sells, we get some money. If they don't, it's going on my shelf.
Yeah.
Because they look gorgeous. They look vintage. It's hard to get a rise out of my wife sometimes, showing her things in my toy world, my geek world. I showed it to her and she was slap. She's like, wow, like those look incredible. So yeah, I cannot wait to share them, because I think it's taken me a very long time to understand this idea of collaboration. because I've been so hands-on that I'm like, I need to see it all the way through.
Yeah.
And but seeing, and I talked to Chompton at Indie Toy Show.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he also told me there was an artist going around. And he, I forget the name of the artist. He came by and asked me if I needed help with my header art. I'm like, bro, I do it all. And I'm like thinking like, yeah, I'm a badass. But then I'm like, this guy has a different take on Chompton's character. And it looked really cool. I was like, yeah, that looks awesome. I'm like, yeah, that is cool. And so, yeah, having David take my work, and I told him this, I'm like, I never, ever would have thought of painting it like this. Like, it wasn't even in my mind. Like, this is just like surreal to me to see that he accomplished something that in my mind's eye, I could only have wished for. And then he actually did it. And I'm like, because he'd show me examples. And he's like, have you thought about painting like this? I'm like, bro, you do it for me.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't even know where to start. I'm like, I love painting, like just throwing paint on stuff and being like, yeah, it's cool. But he just, man, it just looks incredible. So yeah, I can't wait to start sharing that over the next month.
Insane
stuff he's done. And he's really awesome. Yeah. But yeah, like I said earlier, that David, huge part of my toy adventure, because he's the guy that kind of restarted. I always collected toys, you know, like all of us collecting toys, but I never would have thought of like looking that day of bootleg muscle. Like, I thought that was a flash. Even back then when I was a kid, it was a flash in the pan. It was around for like a year, maybe, and then disappeared into the mists of Toyland.
Yeah.
And the fact that he unlocked that memory for me I've told him, you know, like, he's a big part of my adventure, you know, that he unlocked that memory. And I'm like, and then, yeah, and then that's how I came onto the scene, was making my own muscle figures that a lot of the guys in the scene remember me as a collector. You know, a lot of guys would reach out to me when I released my very first figure, and they're like, wait, Tony Moore, the collector? Like, that's what they knew me as. Like, I collected.
Yeah.
And like, you making figures now? I'm like, dude, I'm like, I've been wanting to make my figure. I'm like, dude, I have sketchbooks. Like, I do not have, I'm not at a loss of making figures. It's time. It's time that I'm fighting. Like, there's not enough hours in the day for me to make all the designs I have in my sketchbooks. There's just not. So now it's just a matter of trying to make time for everything in my life, and also making figures, just little sculptures. And sometimes it's hard for me to even say that I make toys, because I really, not to be like all highfalutin or something, but like, even when I was a kid, I considered these little toys like art. Like, I would marvel at my muscle figures. I would marvel at the tiny little die-cast Star Wars figures, and I would marvel at them. And I would, even they were small, I would even put them on a higher level, like, they put them on top of something, and I would look up at them.
Yeah.
And to me, they would look massive, you know?
Yeah.
And so it was this like, how do people do this? And I still don't know how things get mass produced, but I do know how to make stuff. And that, yeah. I think that's the biggest joy is the making, you know.
Yeah.
It's, if people don't buy it, like, oh well.
Yeah. So what's next for you? Having your dream job, already tabling at things, having your own work that you're producing and getting out there. What's next on the horizon for Tony?
You know, I never really know. It, honestly, every day is different.
Yeah.
Every day. I wake up every day. My wife will sometimes, I'll just be like loitering in bed, because I just sort of wake up and I'm just looking at the ceiling, and she'll be like, what are you thinking about? And I'm like, oh man.
If only you knew.
If only you knew. And it's like, because the fact that I could make things so quickly,
mm-hmm.
is, that's the part where again, like I did something for my work. It went from meme to in my hand in a few hours.
Yeah.
Like that's how quickly I move. And sometimes I think it's a downfall because maybe my stuff isn't so polished. Where I see some other Sofubi guys where they spend like months and months refining. And I'm like, why? I'm just like, dude, bang it out. I'll literally just make a little doodle and be like, okay, I can have the gist of it and just bam, I'll just put it out there. And I think that's the part that's good though, because I think you get stifled or you'll hold back if you keep refining and refining. It dilutes the product. There was a thing I remember when I was in animation is the art goes through so many hands and you're trying to retain that initial sketch drawing, the life of the drawing, the essence, the spirit. And you get to the final drawing and it looks dead.
Yeah.
Because there's steps that, and you're like, wait, what happened to the life of that drawing? Well, someone wasn't paying attention.
Yeah.
That slight curve, that slight gesture of the line, that sketch, that little doodle of the drawing is gone. How do you retain that? And I feel for myself that if I'm in the flow, if I can just create without thinking, I get a better result. But I still have that in my head that I do want to make a quality thing. I can't even say it. Is it a toy? Is it a sculpture? Is it a minifigure? Is it something? But it's an extension of me. So I don't know what to call it other than I'm creating art.
Yeah, a piece of art for sure.
I'm making art. And it took me a very long time for me to call myself an artist because I just felt like I've just been on the grind to making other people's dreams manifest, you know, working for these studios. But I was always creating on my own. That never left me. You know, I always had my day job, go home, do family stuff, and then, okay. Midnight to whatever.
Yeah.
That's me time to start making stuff and creating. So it takes a lot of discipline for some people, or some people just don't want to. They get enough enjoyment by working for a studio. They're like, well, that's my creative outlet. But again, I think if I wasn't like this, I would not have the opportunities I have today by experimenting and just trying other fields and being open to let that infest my brain.
Yeah.
Because it is this thing when you learn another field, like if you're open to it, you deep dive and you want to learn everything about it. And that's the way it's been for me on my toy adventure. I went from like, collect, 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 to okay, design, then to sculpting and then printing and then learning about all these other guys that make. And it's just like, man, there's like so much cool stuff out there. And it's just, I'm very fortunate to know some of the people that I know today. Cause I think, again, you want to be around these people, you know, that make this stuff cause it just infests your brain. It just, it's contagious. It's contagious.
Your story is riddled with like it just art and living the dream. And so thank you for coming on Toys on Tap and sharing that. The last part of the podcast is you get to plug everything that you want to plug, things that are coming out, things you're working on, how people can work with you. I know that we've worked with you in making and getting prototypes done and printed. And
oh yeah, yeah, yeah. How'd that turn out?
he's working on the painting right now. I don't have
awesome
a steady enough hand to do what he needs to do. Right. But yeah, please plug away all the good stuff.
So yeah, so this month, Kaijuformia, September 27th.
Yep.
Here in Reseda, just in my hometown here in the valley. Again, second year that's going on. And Manny from Dark Matter Toys, he's heading it. And again, awesome. Mm-hmm. For our first show, I thought it was so awesome. And it's local here to LA, which we always need more of this stuff. And then I just signed up for Collected Con for awesome. Next April. And I have no idea what, again, I have no idea what I'm making. I could have made 5 or 6 new things by then.
Yeah.
And I'll see what I'll make.
Yeah.
But and then if people follow me on my Instagram, that's the one thing I do on my socials is my Instagram, and that's just my name, Tony Mora, at Tony Mora. And it's a little bit of everything, you know, it's my art and maybe some life stuff, but that's I'm very, very easy to find. I do not hide behind any avatars.
Heck yeah. Tony, again, thank you for coming on Toys on Tap.
Oh, for sure, Abe, man. Awesome. I'll see you soon.